Good afternoon, Frelich and Chanukah. On the eighth and final day, the light is burning the brightest and the strongest. Ein Orazu Torah, the light of Chanukah, the menorah represents Torah. So what a beautiful way to spend the final hours of Chanukah in Limud HaTorah, Talmud Torah, studying Torah together. I want to thank, as always, the Frelich Financial Group for sponsoring the Men's Afternoon Kolal. And this week's sponsors, David and Shoshi Meyerfeld and the birth of a great-granddaughter, Hadassah Tigerstein. Mazel tov to the parents, Rivka and Ben Tigerstein, and to the grandparents, Rabbi Eli and Tova Weiss, and Dr. and Mrs. Shapsi Tigerstein, and to the great-great-grandfather, Zev Goldfisher, Billy Goldfisher. That was a mouthful, but mazel tov on the simcha. Okay. Survey of Shas Sugyas continues. We're back to a Shas Sugya. Last week we took a little Chanukah liberty of talking about Hadlaka Osa Mitzvah, Hanukah Osa Mitzvah. Not exactly a Shas Sugya, but this week's topic is in fact a Shas Sugya. It has relevance in no less than three major areas of Halacha. And the topic we're going to study together is the topic of, drum roll please, Beria. The topic of a Beria. What is a Beria? A Beria means a complete unit. A complete unit that is a creation, a complete unit maybe that has a life. We'll see exactly what the definition of Beria is. But we'll see several Gemaras that reference the concept of Beria. We'll see three areas in Halacha where Beria is consequential. And then we'll analyze, I don't know if we'll finish it all this week, but a little alumdus, a little halachic analysis of what exactly is the, what is the theme, what is the definition, why is a Beria have its own rules. So the major sugya of Beria comes from Gemara Mishnah and Makos Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. Source number one, conveniently in your source booklet. And the Mishnah, beginning the third parak of Makkah, says the following, Elehin Halokin. Here is a list of those who violate a lav, a negative prohibition, in which one incurs the penalty of Makos, of lashes. If you skip down to where I've bracketed after a long list that the Mishnah provides, the Gemara will explain what were the rules that determined what made the list, what didn't make the list. Certainly it's not a comprehensive list. There are other violations too, which would yield Makos, but are not included in this list, so you need some defining criteria. So the Gemara will determine that. But anyway, towards the bottom of this list, three lines from the end of the Mishnah, Kama yocha min ha-tevel v'yechayev. Tevel is untithed produce. Produce that needs to have Truma and Maaser removed from it. And before Truma and Maaser is removed from it, it is prohibited to consume. And it's a prohibition, it's a lav, that incurs the penalty of Malkus. So how much Tevel does one have to eat? What quantity, what is the shear, what is the measure of tevel to consume in order to be subject to malchus, to lashes? Rav Shimon Omer, koshu, any measure, any amount. Chachamim Omer, kezayis. The Chachamim say, what are you talking about? We know that when it comes to the world of eating, the minimum measure we have in the world of eating, there are exceptions, but the standard minimum measure in the world of eating is a kezayis, an olive worth. It's not called eating if it's less than that measure, if it's less than that amount. So Reb Shimon says to the Chachamim, I don't understand. Why are you telling me the minimum measure of Tevel in order to incur Malkos is a kol shehu? Don't you agree that if you eat an entire Namala, what's a Namala? You eat an ant whole, that you're Chayev. Now, what's the missing? You eat an ant whole, and the whole, and the ant is what size? Less than a Kazayas. So if you eat a complete ant, and it's less than the measure of a kezayis, says Rav Shimon, you chachamim, you're inconsistent. Don't tell me that the definition of eating is a kezayis, and you don't get malchus for eating tevel if you eat less than a kezayis. I'll give you an example, which is less than a kezayis, and you agree, nevertheless, that you incur the penalty. And what is that in Namala? So Amar Lul Chachamim say, Neshehu Kibriyasa. That's different. How could you compare tevel with the Namala? How can you compare a kernel or produce that grows from the ground with this ant? What's their argument? Kibriyasa. What does the word kibriyasa mean? Oh, so this is going to be a big, this is going to be a big discussion. What does it mean, kibriyasa? The way it was created, that way it was created, that it has a life to it. We'll see. We'll see. So Amar Lahan, so the Chachamim say, don't compare eating a whole ant even less than a kezayis with eating teva less than a kezayis. because the ant is kibriyasa. So Reb Shimon has a pretty sharp comeback. Amalem said Reb Shimon, afchita achas kibriyasa. If you're telling me the ant was born that way, the ant was created that way, the ant is a complete unit that way, and therefore it's an exception to the rule that you need a minimum of a kezias. So each kernel of wheat is kibriyasa. The kernel of wheat was born that way. It grew that way. It was created that way. And therefore, it should too be a beria, and even less than a kezias. A kolshu, one kernel, one grain of wheat, one grain of wheat, kibriyasa, that's how it was created, even though normally we require a kezias to be called eating. If you're going to call an ant a beria less than a kezias, then maybe a kernel of wheat too. This is the conversation between the Chachamim, the Rabbanan, and Reb Shimon in the Mishnah.
Would it be the same for all these silly masters?
So the Gemara tries to, the Gemara elaborates. Turn to page 2, and the Gemara elaborates. That's the Mishnah in Makkos. The Gemara, 4 or 5 blot later, the Gemara in the middle of the third parak elaborates, where I conveniently put a bracket for you. Kama yochal min ha-tevel, the Mishnah had said, machlokas Reb Shimon v'chachamim, is a tevel b'koshu, is it any measure, a minimum, or does it require a kezayis, the standard? Amar Rav Bibi, Amar Reb Shimon min lakish, machlokas b'chita, ava b'kemach divrei akol kezayis. Even Reb Shimon, who says that a kernel of wheat has the same status as an ant, each is defined as a complete unit, and therefore as a complete unit, you should be liable and subject to malchus, even without meeting the measure of a kezias. Even Reb Shimon's going to agree in the case of flour. What's the difference between flour and a kernel of wheat? Flour is ground up. The flour is no longer a complete unit. So even Reb Shimon's going to agree, once it's ground up, then it's no longer a complete unit, then the measure becomes a kezias. Reb Yirmiyam Reb Shimon ben Lakish k'machlokas bezu, kach machlokas bezu. He disagrees and he says, no, Reb Shimon holds the shear zakoshu of Tevel. It's not because the wheat kernel is a complete unit. Even after it's ground and it's flour, Reb Shimon will still contend that it's a koshu. Tanan amalam Reb Shimon, iyatam odim li v'ochan namala koshu shu chayef amrulom deshi kibriyasa. Amalam afchita achas kibriyasa. So now we're quoting our own Mishnah, the conversation. And what is the Gemara trying to extrapolate from the conversation in our Mishnah? Chita in kemach. Lo, how can you tell me that Reb Shimon even holds a koshu once it's ground into flour? From our Mishnah and the conversation there, it sounds like, when is Reb Shimon saying that chita, that it's also a beria, kibriyasa, when it's a kernel? But once it's ground, it sounds like even he's going to agree. So the answer, l'divreim kamar lehu, l'didi afilu kemach nami, ela l'didchu odi limias t'chita achas kibriyasa. Now, Reb Shimon, so the second opinion who holds that Reb Shimon disagrees even when it comes to flour, that the shear is a kolshu, you'll have to explain the Mishnah that when Reb Shimon said, what do you mean, wheat's also a unit, he wasn't saying for himself, he doesn't require a unit. Even the ground kernel, even flour, the shear is a kolshu. He doesn't demand a unit. He was saying, according to you, Rabbanan, that say when it comes to a nemala, you're chayev, because it's a unit, even you have to admit that a kernel of grain is a unit. But I, says Reb Shimon, I don't require it to be a unit, even after it's ground, even if it's a koshu. V'Rabbanan, Brias Neshama Chashuva, Chita Lo Chashuva. Here the Rabbanan give an answer they don't give in the Mishnah. The Mishnah ends the conversation, the Gemara continues the conversation with what the Rabbanan would say. And what would the Rabbanan say? There's a fundamental difference between produce or grain and the ant. And what's that difference? Brias neshama. A namala has a neshama. It's a nefesh. It's a low-level neshama. But it's alive. It's animated. Whereas wheat doesn't have life. Tanya kavasi de Reb Yirmiyah, Reb Shimon omer koshu lamakos, lo omer kezayis el inyan karbon. So the Gemara concludes that there's a brice that supports Reb Yirmiyah's understanding of Reb Shimon. So again, our Mishnah and here the Gemara elaborates that even though normally when it comes to machalas asuras, the prohibition of eating things that one is forbidden from eating, the minimum measure, there are exceptions. There's a grogeris, there's a beitza, we have exceptions. But the normative rule is a kezayis. But you see from our Mishnah that bein l'Reb Shimon, bein l'Chachamim, there's an exception called a beria. A beria means a complete unit. Reb Shimon might define beria different. He has a more expansive, a broader definition of a beria. Chachamim at least conclude that if you eat a namala, do you get malchus for eating the namala? So now you'll go to Beis Din, and your Tohen that you hired will say, my client should not get malchus. Why? He did not eat a kazayis. To which the Beis Din will paskin, we don't care. He ate a unit, the whole ant. When he ate the unit, the whole ant, that is the status of a beria, and he's chayev on a beria. So that is the concept of a beria. A beria has its own status. Even when normally we require a minimum measure for forbidden foods, if it's a unit, we disregard the minimum measure in whatever quantity if it's a unit. The ant could be a tiny ant, the ant could be a big ant. Now when I say that, we'll see, probably not this week, we'll get to it at the very end of the source, long source packet I gave you, is a tshuva by Rav Asher Weiss in the Minchas Asher, going through the issue of bugs in our food. Because the second area, so the first area of halacha that comes out of this Mishnah and Gemara, let me lay out the table. I'll tell you the three areas of halacha where this concept comes, hence it is a shas sugya, and then we'll go back and analyze and understand it a little better. But the first area we just saw was, what is the minimum measure to get malchus? Normally you need to eat a kazayas to get malchus on forbidden foods, unless it's a complete unit, a beria, you'll get malchus even if it's smaller than a kazayas. That's number one. The second area, or the application of it, is beria eino batel. Normally when I have a ratio of 60 to 1, mm-hmm. when forbidden food falls into my mixture, and a ratio of 60 to 1, maybe we'll study this another time, the whole concept of bittel, but normally in a ratio of 60 to 1, it's nullified. What mechanism that works is a big machlokas rishonim. Iser nepach lios heter, does the forbidden food become permissible food, or is it just negligible and marginalized? It has to do with the presence of the taste. So shach, does it have to do with the name? Does it have to do with the taste? Bittel is its own major sugya on its own, and please God, we'll cover it in this theme of shas and shas sugya. So normally the ratio is 60 to 1. We have exceptions. Sometimes it's 100 to 1. We have some exceptions. But normally it's 60 to 1. What happens if an entire beria falls into my mixture? So we'll see. The Gemara says, beria eino batel. A beria is not nullified. Afilu be'elef lo batel. The Rashba and Torah Zabayis quotes the Machlokas Rishonim that maybe when it's 960, maybe when it's close to 1,000, it is batel. We'll come back to that too. But the second application in halacha of beria is that if milk fell in my meat, if chazashmaltz, if pig fat fall into my chalant, if I have 60 to 1 against the pig fat, eat the chalant. By the way, is it more righteous or noble to throw out the chalant or to eat the chalant? It's had a big impact on me. The Piskei Tshuva, in Yoredeya quotes, it's had a big impact on me. I remember back at Smicha when I came across this Piskei Tshuva. Because I would have thought, certainly back then when I was still really religious, I would have thought that if you're really sincere, you're really religious, you give it to the maid. You throw it out. You give it to your non-Jewish co-worker. Because bittel, that's for balabatim. If you're a ben Torah, rely on bittel. Bittel's b'diavad. So the Piskei Tshuva says something remarkable. The Piskei Tshuva says that if you don't eat food, a tarovis, where there is legitimate bittel, uses the lashon, you're a kofer. A kofer? A heretic? How could you be a heretic? A heretic? Aren't you doing the more religious, the more righteous, the more noble thing? Says the Piskei Tshuva, no. Who told you that these foods are forbidden? The Ribono Shel Olam. The same Ribono Shel Olam told you that if you have a ratio of 60 to 1, it's no longer forbidden. So you're going to be holier than God? You're going to be more religious than God? Very instructive, this Piskei Tshuva, in our world of the latest Chumrah, adopting the latest Chumrah. Sometimes there's a Chumrah she'asa lidei kula. Sometimes you think you're following a stringency, but it's a leniency. Maybe you're being machmir and kashrus, but you're being lenient in ikare das. You're a heretic. You're a really religious heretic. You're a really frum heretic. I don't know what your status is, if you're a really stark heretic. But on the one hand, you're a kofar, but you're really stark. It's a mistake. I remember by Zev Lef, who was in our community last year and who recently made headlines for attending the soccer game in Scotland. So he tells you, learning and doing the game. It was not the Shev Shmeis. It was apparently a Talmud Yerushalmi. But anyway, so he writes in his book, Insights and Outlooks, the story when he was a Rav here in Miami Beach. He writes that he once had an older member of his congregation, Yom Kippur was coming, and he conferred with the doctor and concluded that it was unsafe for him to fast on Yom Kippur. Unsafe. So Rabbi Laff approached him and came to confirm that in fact he would not be fasting on Yom Kippur. How could he compromise his own health by fasting on Yom Kippur? So the man said, of course I'm fasting. Doctor Shema, there's no way I'm listening to the doctor. I'm fasting nonetheless. So Rabbi Aleph said, okay, you know, you could fast. It's your prerogative. It's free will. It's America. Do what you want. But then you can have never have another kibbutz in the shul. So the man said, I can never have, what are you talking, because I'm fasting on Yom Kippur, I can't have another kibbutz in the shul? How could that be? So Rabbi Aleph said, yeah, because I only give kibbutzim to people who believe in Hashem. But if you're going to fast when Hashem told you you have to eat, then you're worshiping yourself, you're not worshiping Hashem. Hashem is the one who said fast on Yom Kippur, and Hashem said if it's going to risk your health, eat on Yom Kippur. So you're more religious than God? Is it really God you're worshiping, or is it yourself? That also stuck with me many years ago when I read that in his book. So that's similar to his Pesachei Tshuva. We have a concept called bittul. You have to rely on bittul. It's not that it's a mitzvah to eat it when there's bittul, but if you give it away because you're too righteous to eat it, then you don't believe Pesha Asa Pesha Hitya, because Baruch Hu is the one who said it's forbidden to eat, and then Hashem said it's permissible to eat. So who are you worshiping? You worshiping yourself, or are you worshiping the Eibishter? Pesachei Tshuva says you should rely on bittul. So that's true if it's 60 to 1. But a barrier in a bottle. So if Chazash mouth falls into my chalent, eat, es gesund, enjoy. But what if an ant? So I can have a bucket of Chazash mouth fall into my chalent, but let's say my chalent is the shul chalent. So the Chazash mouth is one bucket, but my shul chalent is the size of 60 buckets. So a bucket of Chazash mouth. That's a lot of Chazash mouth. And yet, as long as my shul chalent is 60 times the Chazash mouth, I can eat it. And a tiny little antala, a little namala, falls into my cholent, throw it out. Can't eat it. Because a beria, I feel a be'elef in a bottle. A beria is not bottle, it's not nullified even in 1,000.
So it's there, you can't take
it out. Well, maybe we'll get into a little bit. We'll get into the status of the namala. Is it no sintam? The namala is no sintam lefgam, the Shulchan Aruch says. So no sintam lefgam, you can take. I don't know who wants to eat the chalent after you scoop out the ant, but if you found the person who would, then we paskin that the ant is... Right, we paskin the ant is nosin tam lefgam. Meaning, on the one hand, the be'en, the mamashus, the presence of the actual ant is the presence of actual cheftza shel iser. It's forbidden to eat it. So, even though normally the ratio is plenty, but if it's a beria, the ratio doesn't help you. But if you can identify it, and you can remove it, then technically, halachically, it's mutter. Aye, what about tam? So an ant is nosin tam lefgam. It doesn't contribute a positive taste, it contributes a negative taste, and therefore you'd be able to continue. This second application of beria comes up, halacha lemaisa, all the time. And like I said, we'll see at the end the shuvah by Rav Asher, whenever we get to it, it comes up all the time when it comes to bugs. Fruit smoothies. Mm-hmm. Can you go to the store and order a fruit smoothie? Well, no one's inspecting that fruit. So, again, we'll get to this, but the fruit might have a complete bug. So you say, bittul. I went to yeshiva. I know a little bit. I can use a few catchphrases here. Bittul. Hey, rabbi, what about bittul? True, there might be a bug on the strawberry in my strawberry fruit shake that I'm getting at the local fruit shake place. But so what if there's a bug on the strawberry? What about bittul? It'll be nullified. When they mix the whole thing up, they add the water, the milk, the other fruit. Bittul. So what's the answer? Beria. It's a complete unit. Ain't a bottle. So I'll answer that once the berry is chopped up, then it's no longer a berry. Then you would say bittul. So what will you answer back? What about? Are you allowed to chop up a berry on purpose, intentionally, in order to? Okay, so maybe we'll get back to fruit smoothies. Again, we want to stay at 30,000 feet because the topic is shas sugyas. We're not getting knee-deep in beria and fruit smoothies. But that's the whole discussion. First of all, if the person at the fruit store is not doing it for me, they're doing it because this is how they make fruit smoothies for everyone, is that called emavatlanis lachatchila if they're not doing it for me? That's number one. Number two, if I don't know it's there, maybe it's a suffix. I don't know what's there, and if it is there, it's going to be chopped up. So then, bittul. It's a whole sugya about fruit smoothies. But I have that principle. The point I want to tell you is the second application of beria. The first application of beria was normally the minimum measure is a kezias. If what you're eating is a whole unit, says the Mishnah and the Gemara Makos, then Beria, even less than a kezias, you'll incur malchus. Application number two is, Beria ain't a bottle. Normally, when it comes to forbidden foods, in a ratio of, the standard is, the default is 60 to 1. But if it's a complete unit, if it's a Beria, ain't a bottle. The third application of halacha, of Beria is, anyone know? Bracha achrona. Again, we're going to see all of this. I'm giving you the preview. The four spice is bracha achrona. Normally, there's a requisite measure that you have to have eaten within a requisite measure of time in order to be obligated to make a closing bracha, bracha achrona. But what if you didn't eat the minimum measure, but what you ate was a beria? Tosfos is going to bring this up, because what if you had a whole grape? So the grapes didn't need to add up to enough to be mechayev you in the shiur of a bracha achrona, but the grape is a beria. So maybe as a beria, you should be chayev in a bracha achrona, because it's a davar chashav. A beria is, if a beria is enough to make you get malchus, and a beria is enough that even in 1,000 times it's not nullified, then a beria should be enough to obligate you in making a bracha achrona. So those are the three applications in halacha of this concept, this shas sugya concept of beria, what's called a complete unit. And now that we gave the introduction, the overview, let's dive back in. So we saw the Mishnah Malkus, the Machlokas of Shimon and the Chachamim, and the Gemara expands on this Machlokas of Shimon and the Chachamim on the definition of beria. So how do we now define what constitutes a beria? Oh, so the perfect segue.
What if that bug in the smoothie is killed during the process?
So good, so that is a perfect... That's a perfect segue. So for the Chachamim, which is how we paskin, a kernel or a grain of wheat is not a beria. Why is it not a beria? Because it's not... Brias neshama chashuva, chita lo chashuva. Brias neshama chashuva, chita lo chashuva. That's what the Gemara said. So the creation of a neshama, of a life force, that's called chashuv, but a kernel of grain, of wheat, that's not called chashuv. That's not significant. So from the Gemara, it sounds like the Chachamim do not include a kernel of wheat as a beria. Why? What's missing? Bris neshama,
right.
Kernel of wheat doesn't have life. It's not an animated being. But the Gemara doesn't just say neshama. The Gemara could have just said neshama. It could have said the Chachamim hold chita is not a beria. Why? Because it doesn't have a neshama. But it uses an adjective to modify it. Or I'm not a grammarian. It uses another word to amplify bria neshama. What is it? Neshama chashuva, which begs the question. Is chashuva describing a neshama? So really what it needs is a neshama, but every neshama is chashuva. Or to be a beria, you need to be chashuva, and a neshama is an example of being chashuv.
Chashuva is subjective.
You understand? The Gemara says for the Chachamim, chita is eliminated. Why? It doesn't have a neshama chashuva. So which is the key criteria to be a beria? Is it has to have a neshama? And chashuva is describing a neshama. Every neshama is chashuva. Or is it has to be chashuva, and a neshama is one example of being chashuv, but maybe you could be chashuv in other ways even without a neshama. What does the Gemara mean to tell us in the Chachamim's definition of what is a beria? Yeah.
The Gemara says chita lo chashuva. It doesn't say chita doesn't have a neshama.
Oh, in the contrast it says, Brias neshama chashuva chita lo chashuva. It doesn't say chita ein a neshama. So that sounds like what is the key criteria? Chashuva, which begs the question. So why didn't we say nemala chashuva chita lo chashuva? Why do we say neshama? So you understand when the Gemara gives you two seeming variables or criteria, the question is, do you need both? Is one amplifying the other? When it says neshama chashuva, why didn't it just say neshama, or why didn't it just say chashuva? Presence of both seems to be a relationship. So is it the chashuva is describing that a neshama is chashuva? So anything with a neshama? Or is it saying no, anything that's chashuv? A neshama is chashuv, a chita is not chashuv.
Because it doesn't have a neshama. That's why it's not chashuv. That's
then why does it use the word chashuv? Why didn't it say Briyas Neshama Achita Eina Neshama? Okay, so then Phil, you're falling on the tzad that says the key criteria is being chashuv. Having a neshama is one way to become chashuv. So which is the key? That it has the neshama or that it's chashuv? What if it has? Can it have a neshama and not be chashuv? Can it have a neshama and not be chashuv? So not, why not just say neshama? Why do we have to say chashuva?
Explain it. Why neshama is important?
You understand? We're trying to take you through the way of thinking of learning. How do we dissect the sugya? How do we dissect the sugya? When the Gemara says of the Chachamim, the criteria is neshama chashuva, is the key neshama and the neshama is chashuv. So neshama chashuva. Or is the key chashuva and neshama is one way to be chashuv, but you could be chashuv in another way. So we'll see, this could be the different ways of reading and understanding what the Chachamim's criteria of a beria is, might be the machlokas Rishonim we're about to see. Tosus understand. What sheet is Tosus? Tosus here in Makos and Tosus in Chulin as well on the next page. We're still on page 2. At this rate, it'll take us several classes to get through Beria. But Tosus says the following. I would say the top Tosus, it's the only Tosus. On page 2. Makos Yud Zayin Amin Aleph. Rabbonim Brias Neshama Chashuva Chita Lo Chashuva. Tema Deperik Yed Anasha Aminan Shaini Gid Deberiyahu V'lo Batal. What if a gid anasha, the sciatic nerve, the part of the animal that has the gid anasha, falls into your chalent? Would you nullify it? Let's say you have a ratio of 500 against the gid anasha that fell into your chalent. Would you say the gid anasha is nullified? So the Gemara in Chulin Daf Tzadi Vav says, no, gid anasha is ain't a batel. Why is gid anasha ain't a batel? What's so special about the gid anasha that it's not batel? And the Gemara answers, why is the gid anasha not batel? It's a beria. Because the Geranosha's beria. That's the Gemara. Shaini Gid de Beriahu Velo Bata. You can see it on the next page because I have there the Gemara in Chulin. So Tosu says, Viafagav the less be neshama. So the simple pshat in the Gemara that to be a beria you have to have a neshama chashuva. Tosus is understanding the simple understanding is that what is the definition of a beria? It has to have a neshama. Chashuva was describing what every neshama is, but the key is it has to have a neshama. So Tosa says, does the gid anasha have a neshama? No. Now, the gid anasha was part of an animal that was alive, but when the gid anasha falls into your chalent, it's a slab of meat. It's not alive. And the gid anasha as a unit never had a life. It was part of a larger unit that have a life, but the gid anasha as a unit didn't have an independent life. The Giranusha never had a pulse or a beat independent of the rest of the body of the animal. So Tosu says, Tema, I don't understand it. How do you say the definition of a beria is a neshama? The Gemara defines a Giranusha as a beria, and a Giranusha doesn't have a neshama.
What would you say about a dead bug? Does not have a neshama anymore?
No, the difference is a dead bug as a unit of a bug once had a neshama. But the Giranasha as a unit of a Giranasha never had a life. The only way you ever had that Giranasha was once it had no life. So that's the difference. So Tosu says, So the Gemara says, maybe this is what it means. That Gid is different. Why? Came into Asim Rabbias Neshama. Because it came from an entity that once had. Velo Nira. Don Nevela de Kasim Rabbias Neshama. Vafa Bichain Lohave Beria. So let me ask you, how do you ever have a case of treif that falls into your kosher and is ever bottled, says Tosfos? Every piece of treif, chaza schmaltz, non kosher meat, whatever it is, it all, milk, whatever fell in, originated from an animal that had a life. So if you could define beria as not having a life right now, but coming from something that once had a life, that would be true for every case of an animal or animal product that fell in your mixture. So every nevela, basically what Tosfos is saying is, we don't say that a nevela is a beria. What's a nevela? Nevela is any animal that dies other than through shechita. If you're learning Daf Yomi, you better know these definitions. A nevela is an animal that dies anyway other than through shechita. So it could be roadkill is a nevela, and it could be a bad shechita is a nevela, a poor shechita. That's in contrast to treifa. We use the word, the Yiddish word treif, to describe anything. You could have candy made that's not kosher and you call it treif. You could have dairy that's not kosher and we call it treif. It's not treif. A treifa means an animal that has a terminal illness and can't live for 12 months. That's a treifa. You could do a perfect shechita on a treifa and it's not kosher. That's why we inspect, right? If you learn the daf, we're seeing all this now. That's why we inspect it afterwards. Why don't we rely on Rov? And so on. So back to our Tosfos. Hold on, back to our Tosfos. Tosfos says the following. Hold on. The Gemara says, a namala is a beria, a chita is not a beria. Says Tosfos, I'm trying to understand why. So the Gemara gave us a hint. It said, a neshama chashuva is a beria, chita is not a neshama chashuva. Which is chita missing? That it's not a neshama? Or is it missing that it's not chashuva? Says Tosfos, if you're going to define a beria as by having a neshama, what about Gita Nasha? The Gemara defines Gita Nasha as a beria. Gita Nasha never had a neshama. So you'll say Gita Nasha did have a neshama, because the Gita Nasha was once part of an animal that was alive. But says Tosfos, every nevela, treifa, basar b'chalav, every time we talk about a tarovas that has some animal, why would it ever be batel? If it means something that came from something that was once alive is the definition of a beria, every piece of nevela is a beria. And none of it should ever be batel, but we know it is batel. Basar b'chalav is batel, and nevel is batel, and treif is batel. So how could they ever be batel? Elamai, it must be that the reason they're batel is because they're not, what? They're not a beria. If they're not a beria, it must mean that beria is not defined by once having had a life. So Tosfos is back to square one. How do you define a beria? The Gemara and the Chachamim said, within the Chachamim's opinion, said, an ant is a beria, it has a neshama chashuva, chita is not a beria. We're trying to define why. It can't be defined by having life. So let's read again. Yishlom adachi kamer, shani gid the beria v'kevin da'asim b'riyas neshama shapiro. Beria. Maybe the gid anasha is a beria. Why? It comes from an animal that, in fact, once did have a neshama. Says Taisav is lo nira. Anything that once you cut it up loses its name and its identity, that's not called a beria. So a gid anasha that's cut in pieces is not a gid anasha. And an ant that's cut up is not an ant. These things, once they're incomplete, once they're not whole, once they're in pieces, they lose their name. Right? So for Tosfos, the definition of a beria is, does the object lose its name when it's cut up? If the object loses its name when it's dismembered, then it's a beria. If it maintains its name even once it's cut up, then it's no longer a beria. So, when I have a piece of steak, is that still a cow?
No.
Maybe that's a bad example. What? Right. Blood's not a beria. First of all, blood's not a unit. Unless you drain the animal of all the... I understand that, but the blood is not a unit. Okay, so Tosfos defines what's a beria? Kishenechtach. When you cut it, does it still have its name or it loses its name? So Tosfos says, but I have a problem in my pshat, because my definition of beria, maybe it's focused on the word chashiv, right? If a thing is its whole unit, it has its name. Once you cut it, it loses its name. It means that chashivas. But the Gemara used another word to define beria. What other word? Neshama. So what does Tosfos do about the word neshama? Brias neshama chashiva lei lemed l'dvar of the Reb Shimon Amri lidi dana filo nami is bein neshama la veberia el lidicha de beriu odili mia de kevin de leka neshama de betela. So Tosfos answers that the chachamim are saying the word neshama was only in the context of Reb Shimon, but according to the chachamim, you don't have to have neshama as one of the criteria. So Tosfos is redefining the whole Gemara. That when the Gemara says in this exchange, in the conversation of Shimon and the Chachamim, that the Chachamim say back to Reb Shimon that neshama chashuva is a beria, chita ain't a chashuva, that was lididcha. For you, Reb Shimon, you at least admit that if it has a neshama. But for we, the Chachamim, Tosfos argues, their definition of a beria is even without neshama. The whole definition of a beria is, if you cut it, does it lose its name? Meaning, is its identity wrapped or intertwined entirely in its being a unit? So it's only called that when it's a unit. Once you cut it up and it's no longer that unit, it's no longer that thing. It doesn't even have that identity.
That's a barrier.
Right.
So if you cut it up and it loses its name, it is a barrier.
Exactly. That's what I said. It's a unit. Why? Because something that only maintains its name when it's whole, when it's a unit, is called a beria. Something when you cut it up, it loses its name, that's not called a beria. Because what's the whole idea of a beria? The whole idea of a beria is it's a unit. It's a davar chashuv, it's something significant, it's something consequential. It's a unit. If I can cut it up and it still has that name, did it matter that it was in its whole state as a unit? No, because it's even when it's half a unit, it's still that unit. Then it was never a unit. What made it a unit was that when it was whole, it bore that name. If when you cut it up, it still carries the name, then it was never significant that it had that name when it was whole. The only way that it's significant and has the name when it's whole is if it loses the name when it's not whole. But if it maintains the name when it's not whole, it was never significant that it was whole. So the whole idea of beria is that it was whole. So if it maintains the name even when it's not whole, then you can't tell me that being whole is critical to who it is. So says Tosfos, the very definition of a beria is a unit of something that's whole. How do I know when something is a unit and whole it's meaningful? If when it's not whole, it's no longer called that thing. Then it's meaningful when it's whole. But if even it's not whole, it's called that thing, it was never meaningful that it was whole. And it being a unit, a whole, wasn't chashuv to begin with. So Tosfos utterly ignores the word neshama. He gets away with the technicality by saying the Chachamim only used the word neshama chashuva because they were answering Reb Shimon. But in their own definition, and for our purposes, our definition, says Tosfos, you don't need the word neshama. The only thing that matters for us, says Tosfos, is when you cut it, when you break it, does it still have its name? Tosfos on the next. Did we finish Tosfos? We didn't finish it. Yeah, we did finish Tosfos. Tosfos on Daf and Chulin, Daf Tzadi Vav, says the same thing. The bottom Tosfos says it a little bit longer. Look at the second line of Tosfos. Maishna Aver Menachai V'Ov Tameh V'Gid V'Sheretz Chashivit Fei Beria Minevela Tahora B'Misas says B'Kazayis V'Lo Chashiva Beria. Tosfos here in Chulin has a contrast. He says, here's a list of things that are Beria. You ready? Aver Menachai Of Tamei, Gid Anasha, Sheretz. Those are all considered a beria. If a Aver Menachai, you rip the limb off a live animal, a whole limb, or an Of Tamei, or the unit of the Gid Anasha, or a complete bug, a Sheretz, if they all fall into your mixture, ain't a battle. Or if you eat any of them, even less than a Kazayas, will you get Malkus? Yes, why? Because it's a beria. Says Tosfos, why are they chashivei tfei? Why are they more significant? Minevela tahora b'misasas b'kazayis. Why is it that if a sheichet messed up the shechita and he served the chicken nonetheless? Every now and then we hear of kosher scandals where a kosher restaurant serves non-kosher. So we start to quickly figure out, well, the kalim, what's the stat? So would you say bittel? Why are you ever saying bittel? Why don't we say the nevela is not batal? It's a beria. It's the same thing. Tosfos It's the same opinion of Tosas. V'lo chashiv beria. V'chein teva lo chashiv lei rabbanan beria. B'makos. So Tosfos here is setting it up as a question. We have two lists. Nemala, Sheretz, Gedanasha, Ever Menachai, Of Tamei. Those are all a beria. On the other hand, Nevela and Tevel, those are all not a beria. Why? Which is a beria, which not? Says Tosfos, Yeshlamar, Dainu, Taima, Daniya, Tchiyam, Rachmana, Lo Sochal, Gid, Lo Sochal, Of Tamei, V'chim, Be'ever Menachai, Kilu Pirish, Ben Godel, Ben Kotten, Dekulu, Mikri, Gid, V'of, Uvavach, Yushlemim. Because when it came to those things, the Torah specifically instructed us, don't eat this unit. And it gave the unit a name. Right? The name, the unit has a name. Gid Anasha is a unit of the animal. It has a name. And the Torah distinguished it. And the Torah specifically distinguished it and said, don't eat the gid. Of Tameh has a name. This unit of the bird, Of Tameh. Aver min achai, this unit of an aver from achai has a name. It's a unit. It's as if the Torah was telling us, normally when it comes to forbidden food, we have, kezias is the shear for all forbidden food. But these foods, I'm not giving to you under the general umbrella of forbidden foods. I'm giving it to you with its own name. Each unit has a name. So when is it prohibited? When it's in that unit. That unit has a status, even if it's less than a kezias. Ben gadol ben katan kulam nikra gid v'of uvavach yushlemim. What's the defining factor for the unit? As long as it is whole. Aval nevela chaticha nami mashma nevela. But you talk about a nevela, the whole animal's a nevela, the pulk is a nevela, the chicken breast is a nevela, the little piece of meat's a nevela, the kezias, the kebetz, the grogeris, whatever size of that flesh of that non-kosher meat, it's all a nevela. Gid anasha is only gid anasha when it's the whole gid. Aver menachai is only aver menachai when it's the whole aver. Of tameh is only of tameh when it's the whole of. But tevel is tevel even when it's a grain. A sheretz is only a sheretz when it's the whole sheretz. Not half a sheretz. So when is it that the Torah said this is the prohibited thing that will give you malchus? When you eat the whole unit. And because the Torah separated it out in its prohibition as a unit, the unit is its measure. Not a kezias, not a kebetz, not a grogeris, no other normal measure. But what is the measure of each of these things the Torah prohibited as that thing? The unit in which it comes. So the sheriff, the oftame, the ever menachai, I don't care whether it's bigger than a kezias, smaller than a kezias. There's only one criteria I care about, says Tosus. And what is that? If it's shalem. When it's that whole unit, it's the whole unit. Big, small, I don't care. Torah doesn't say don't eat a wheat kernel of tevel. It says don't eat tevel. The unit wasn't given as a kernel of tevel. The unit that was given was tevel. When the unit that's given is tevel, it's a kezias. As opposed to all these other things. Of tameh, gid anasha, ever menachai, sheretz. And so on and so forth. So Tosfos elaborates more. I want to go a little bit weiter, but that's the what?
That's what I was trying to tell you.
What were you trying to tell me?
Gid anusha is a specific thing, you know. It's singled out in the Torah, so same as either.
Right. So Tosfos is entirely caught up in the word chashuv. He doesn't care about the word neshama. And again, in Makos, he explained why he doesn't care about the word neshama, because he thinks neshama is just how the Rabbanan were answering Reb Shimon. But in the Rabbanan's definition and our definition, the halachic definition of a beria, so coming back, for Tosos, what's a beria? Anything that the Torah said is prohibited as that unit. Not just under the umbrella of nevela, but anything is a nevela. But when the Torah says this is the unit of prohibition, then that's the unit of prohibition, big or small, as long as it's part of that whole unit, then that is what is forbidden. That is the definition of a beria.
Does that mean you have to recognize it as it is?
What do you mean?
Like an ant, if it gets cut up in the chon, and you can't recognize it? Is it a beria or if you can't recognize it?
If it melts and dissolves, yeah, it's not batal. Even though you can't find it, it's not batal.
It
doesn't have to stay whole to be batal. When milk falls into your chicken soup and all gets mixed up, you say bittel. I don't want to get into Isser v'heter issues. lach balach, yavish biyavish, lach biyavish, min bamino, min b'sheino mino. That's a whole separate topic. Right? We're focused on the definition of beria. Tosos asks a question at the end of that big Tosos. He says, within the sheet of Reb Shimon holds that not only is a nemala a beria, what else did Reb Shimon hold as a beria? Reb Shimon said, what's the prohibition of tevel? When do you get malchus for tevel? If you eat even a koshu. Why? Because even one kernel of grain, says Reb Shimon, is considered a beria. So Tosos says, we have a halacha. Truma is batel. Anyone know what the measure is? B'meya. Truma b'teila b'meya. Truma is batel in the measure of 100. So Tosos wonders, why is truma batel in 100? That kernel of truma is a beria. That apple is a beria. If you have a whole unit of the truma, why should it ever be batel? Tosos is asking that within Reb Shimon. If Reb Shimon defines beria, chita, even as a beria, then why is truma ever batel? And Tosos leaves it as a tzarech iyun. So that's our first definition. So far we established that there's a concept called beria. You get malchus, even if it's less than a kezias, but it's a whole unit. We said it has three areas of application. In getting malchus, even less than a kezias. In beria in a batel, that's never nullified. And bracha achrona, which we have no hopes of getting to this week or maybe even next week. So how do you define beria now that we've established there's a halachic concept? Tosos defined it for us. Why isn't an apple of truma called a beria for Tosos? Because the Torah didn't say, don't eat a truma apple. The Torah said, don't eat truma. So the unit of the apple was never delineated by the Torah as the unit of prohibition. Therefore, it's not a beria. As opposed to, Eiver Menachai, Sheretz, Oftameh, Gedanasheh, there, the Torah delineated in that unit the prohibition. Nevela is a general umbrella. Torah didn't delineate it in a unit. So Tosfos' definition of a beria is something the Torah delineated in a unit that it only bears that name when it's the whole unit. If you were to cut it up, then it wouldn't be that unit. It wouldn't bear that name. That's Tosfos. The Ramban, the Rajba, the Ran, they disagree with Tosfos fundamentally. Page number 4. The Ramban and the Ran, Chulin and Makos, that's why it's truly a Shas Sugya, it appears in several places, they disagree. And they say the following. V'libata Baruva Beria Shaini, on the right-hand column of page 4, Perish Koldavar Shisuro, you ready? The Ramban is about to give us his definition of a Beria. And his definition includes no less than three criteria. Number one, Sheisuro miyom shenivra. It has to be prohibited from the day it came into being. Is an apple of truma prohibited from the day it came into being? No. Is an animal, nevela, does it come from an animal that was prohibited from the day it came into being? No. When that cow was walking around in the field, enjoying the grass, it might have been perfectly permissible. It wasn't asa from day one. So we see criteria number one for the Ramban, the Rajba, the Ran is Isuro miyom shenivra, kigon, gid vov, tamei, sheret, nikra, beria, velokan alav b'choshehu. So a gid anasher and of tamei, they're forbidden from inception, and because they're forbidden from inception, their measure is not a kezias, their measure is a koshehu as their unit. Vuhu shaya mibali chayim. Criteria number two is they have to be alive. Kedegarsinim perik elehin alokin, kama yocha min atel v'yechayev, Reb Shimon omer koshu, v'cham omer kizayis, omer shimon miyatamod v'ochon namala, koshu shuchayev, omer lebnei shi briyasa, al afchita ata briyasa, rabbanon briyas neshama chashiva, perish, briya shahaya ba neshama. So the Rambanir is disagreeing with Tosos. Tosos dismissed the neshama criteria, saw that as a technicality within Reb Shimon, but the Ramban says, no, neshama chashuva, neshama is one of the criteria. So we have two criteria so far. For the Ramban, it has to have been prohibited from inception, and it has to have a neshama. It has to be alive. Afilu gid nami arei haya bo neshama, b'behema v'chol yivarea, v'af api she'im ba'achshav neshama. So the Ramban says, ay, gid anasha, where's its neshama? So the Ramban accepts what Tosos rejected. The Ramban says, where's the neshama of the gid? It was part of an animal that had a life. Aye, why did Tosos not like that? You remember why Tosfos rejected that? Because if that's the case, why would you ever say bittul by any nevela or machal or basa b'chalav and so on? So the Ramban doesn't have that problem. Why? Because the Ramban had a second criteria. Namely, it was forbidden from its inception. So anyway, tzipur tmeya b'misasa k'gon gitzeh b'riyas neshama mikrei v'chashiva. About tzipur tahora shemesa af bishi k'briyasa kevan sheshem nevela she'aleh alav mishas b'riyasa hu ain akru b'riya. So Tosfos is also answering, I'm sorry, the Ramban is answering what bothered Tosfos. Tosfos entertained the possibility that how do you define a beria? It had a neshama. And that's what the Gemara meant, neshama chashuva. Tosfos rejected that because then every nevela should be a beria. So the Ramban is saying, no, every nevela is not a beria for another reason. Why is it not a beria? Because it wasn't prohibited from its inception. It was walking around as a perfectly permissible cow. It only became prohibited when it became a nevela. So by having the second criteria, so the very criteria Tosfos rejected that didn't work for Tosfos, works for the Ramban. But why does it work for the Ramban? Because he has another criteria with it. Understand? Good. Once it's chopped up. Right, so the Ramban, so far we saw two criteria. It has to be prohibited from its inception. It has to have a life. Why is a shor haniskal? The Gemara in Zvachim. The Daf Yomi learners most certainly remember that Gemara in Zvachim. Halavai. So that Gemara in Zvachim says a shor haniskal is not a beria. So if a shor haniskal falls in, the meat of a shor haniskal falls into your chalant, would you say it's batel? Yes. Why don't we say the shor haniskal is a beria? What's a shor haniskal? An ox that gored three times is considered muad, and then we had to put it to death. So why don't we say it's a beria? It's a whole shor haniskal. The whole shor got this judgment. So the answer is the Ramban's first criteria. It wasn't born that way. It wasn't born that way. It hasn't been forbidden since its inception. Since it hasn't been forbidden since its inception, who cares that it has a life? In other words, the Ramban's two criteria work together. It has to be forbidden from its inception, and it has to have a life. What about the fat that covers the different parts of the animal? We do allow them to be batel, even though these fats are prohibited. They're machalos asuros. We say there's bitol. Aye, what about the fact that they've always been forbidden? They're chaylev. And they're from a live from an animal that had a life, they're alive. So why aren't we calling them a beria? Yishlomar, lefisha'enan aver bifnei atzman. Avagidin halalu kamo aver bifnei atzman hein. Holo mishas briyasa nasrov lukitsipur tmeya. Va'od sha'afilu begid be'in and shalim of miktasa in a chayev. So Ramban concludes his criteria. And the Ramban just threw in a third. What are the Ramban's three criteria to be defined as a beria? Prohibited since its inception. It has to have a life. And it has to be a complete unit. So Tosfos said, it all has to do with its name. If when you chop it up, it loses its name, it's not a beria. That's the whole definition for Tosfos. Whereas for the Ramban, the definition is these three criteria. Number one, has to be prohibited from its inception, it has to have a life, and it has to be whole. So, gir anosh is a beria. But for the Ramban, Eivor Menachai is not. Okay, and then the Ramban goes on to quote more Rishonim and their opinions. Tosfos Rabbeinu HaTzarfatim, we just saw Tosfos' opinion. And on the next page, he quotes a tshuva of Rabbeinu HaGadol Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi. In a case of our cases, what happens when a unit of a bug falls into a pot? Right here, the Ramban, we could go back and forth where the Ramban rejects Tosfos' reason. We could read it, let's read it. I'm back where the underline is. On page 4, the left-hand column, the underline. The Ramban is now addressing Tosfos that we began with. Tosfos gave his definition of a beria, that if he cut it up and it loses its name, it was never a beria to begin with. Only something I'm sorry, then it's a beria. Only something that if you cut it up and it loses its name, is it a beria? If you cut it up and it doesn't lose its name, then it's not a beria. So the Ramban doesn't like it. Why? First he quotes it. Tosfos Rabbi Seinu HaTzarfati Mefurish Shekol Dover Sheshmo Alav Ba'odo Shalem Ukshein Shalem Iba Ebed Shmo. Also, Kari Beria. Kegon Of Tamei Ksheino Shalem Eino Kari Of Tamei El Chaticha Shel Of Tamei V'chein Gid Avon Nevela Afilu Chaticha Achas Koron Asa Nevela Lefichla Kshamar Akasav Lasocha Gid Ki Ilu Pirish Ben Gadol Ben Katan Kedamina Perak Shelid Shavuos. So he quotes Tosfos' reason. So if you cut it up and it loses its name, that was a Beria. If when you cut it up, it's still called that thing, it was never a beria. When it was whole, that unit never meant. So what does the Ramban not like about Tosfos? Tosfos utterly eliminated the word neshama. But Dainlon is barley tamam. She had a bedicta kalashonos ki kol ayvarim domi achalak emachelak ba'akol shav mishmosayim kol basar abehema va'adam nikra basar v'chaticha mimena nikra basar. He says, I don't understand. Meat's the generic way of saying the whole animal. So say that's the name. Avad biyvarim aklaliyim miktasim ein shema maleim hayad b'shlimus l'tikra yad v'chelak mimena ein yad. So the hand is called the hand, and a piece of the hand is not called the hand. So does that make the hand a barrier? Is the hand of the animal a beria because the hand of the animal is called a hand? And once you chop it up, it's no longer a hand, now it's fingers? So that makes it a beria? So the Ramban does not like. The Ramban does not like the interpretation of Tosfos. So far we saw there's a concept of beria. Three applications in halacha. Even less than a kezias, you could get malchus on a beria. If a beria falls into your mixture, it's not nullified. Maybe you have to make a bracha achrona, even though it's less than a kezias. On a beria. How do we define a beria? So far we saw Tosfos and we saw the Ramban. Mirtz Hashem will pick up from here in our definitions. What are they arguing about? Not just the criteria. We're going to come full circle because we talked about, is neshama amplifying chashuva? Is the chashuva amplifying neshama? What are they arguing about in terms of the reading of the Gemara about how you define something as a beria? Have a great day. Rabbi Maskus will be in a few minutes. Rabbi Shaket is not giving shir today.